are familiar with my courses, WebCT, and Effie Drakopoulos from the English and French Language Center in Continuing Education is going to talk to us today how she's integrated aspects of Facebook and YouTube in her My Courses course.
Yes.
So, Effie?
Thank you. And thank you for coming this afternoon. My presentation is on creating activities for collaborative online learning. I think when I decided that I was going to make a presentation at this fair and I was trying to think of what it was that I'd present this year, I realized that a lot of our lecturers have been asking questions about creating activities for collaborative online learning because we will be changing our intensive program in the fall and we're going towards a collaborative learning model. So I thought, well, this is the perfect opportunity to do a little research and put a few things together for my colleagues and my colleagues throughout the university. So I'm by no means a specialist in this area, but I'm here to share with you the work that I've done and that some of us have done at our department, and perhaps to have an exchange at the end to see if you've used Facebook and YouTube and other applications. So this is what I'll be talking about, a little bit on collaborative learning and elements that we should consider when we're designing instruction for collaborative online learning. Then I'll go into some sample activities using my courses, Facebook, YouTube, and I'll mention a few other ones that are out there that perhaps you use in your courses or might be interested in incorporating. And at the end, we'll just look at a few pitfalls that we can avoid. So what is collaborative learning? Well, in the broadest sense, it's a situation in which two or more people learn or attempt to learn something together. Okay? It's a situation. The words collaborative learning describe a situation in which particular forms of interaction among people are expected to occur, triggering learning mechanisms in turn. Of course, we learn by ourselves, but then when we learn with others, other mechanisms are triggered. So the goal of designing instruction for collaborative learning, therefore, is to create the situations that will help trigger learning mechanisms. All right, so that's what you need to keep in mind when you're designing instruction. You're really creating the situation, the circumstances in which your students will have higher level thinking incorporated into what they do. So on an individual cognitive level, activities such as reading, building, predicting, and here building, I mean creating or developing, trigger learning mechanisms such as induction, deduction, and compilation. When learning from collaboration, interaction among learners generates extra activities, and this is what we're aiming for. They generate explanation, disagreement, mutual regulation, monitoring each other's efforts, and so on. And so these activities trigger extra cognitive mechanisms. Knowledge elicitation, for example, internalization. There's a reduced cognitive load because the amount of processing is reduced since the labor is divided. You don't have to do all the thinking by yourself. You're now sharing this task with others. So collaborative learning is precisely about such activities and mechanisms. Our challenge as instructional designers is to develop ways to increase the probability that some types of interaction will occur, ultimately leading to the desired outcome. So that's what you need to keep in mind. You're developing ways to increase the probability of these interactions to take place. So in online activities, there's interaction with resources, all the content that you will put in your course, for example, whether it's WebCT or some other application, interaction with the teachers, with the instructors, the feedback that you provide to your students, the help that you give them, interaction with peers, which is what all this is about, the collaborative learning, an interaction with the interface. You want something to be user-friendly. I've put pictures and colors in the hopes of making this interface look user-friendly. Under the umbrella of collaborative online learning, we have collaboration, social interaction, dialogue, knowledge sharing, problem solving, negotiation, clarification, explanation, and the list goes on. This is what we try to elicit from our students in the design. So, types of interaction that you should incorporate in collaborative online learning activities are providing feedback, giving and receiving help, exchanging resources and information, challenging and encouraging each other, jointly reflecting on progress and process, planning, seeking input, having social conversations, chatting, monitoring group effort, initiating activity, organizing work, and the list goes on. But these are the types of interactions you should be aiming for when you're designing your instruction. And what types of activities can you use? Well, role play, case studies, discussion groups, debates, brainstorming, group projects, simulations, and there are many others, but we've tried these at our department and they work very well, and they work across the board, not necessarily just for language courses. And here are some sample collaborative online learning activities. There are many possible applications, but these are some that are interesting. I was also at the table this morning, and many of you stopped by, and it seemed as though Facebook was the winner. There was a lot of interest in that. I'll talk about it in a moment. Of course, I think you're all familiar with WebCT, My Courses. It's now called Web Courses, I believe. It keeps changing. I've taken my definitions from Wikipedia, by the way, so if there are any errors, you can just go in and change that. They're interactive. To give you an example of a collaborative online learning activity using My Courses, these would be instructions to the students for one task, okay? You've been paired with a classmate for this activity. After both you and your partner have read the editorial, "It Ain't Easy Being Green," email each other through the WebCT mail tool to discuss the editorial, plan, and write a joint blog in response. Okay? So discuss, plan, and write are interactions that we want to encourage in collaborative learning. And a blog is different from a summary, so we continue here, we give them a little bit of an explanation that a blog is different from a summary because it includes your opinion and has no specific formatting requirements. A blog is like an online diary or journal. The tone can be formal or informal. Post your blog on WebCT discussion board under the topic environmental blog. So when you create an activity like this in the discussion board, it's important that you clearly identify the title of the discussion and that you communicate this with your students so that they know exactly where to go and post their blogs or journals or discussions, for that matter. Has anybody used YouTube in your courses? Yes? Okay. The way that I've used it in mine, I teach English communication and cultural patterns. It's an advanced level English language course. It's a complementary course. It's 3 credits. But it deals a lot with intercultural communication. And there is one unit in which we deal with nonverbal communication. So what I've done is I've created an exercise, and sorry, I just copy-pasted, so the font is very small. But they have a reading to do on nonverbal communication, and then the instructions, you and two of your classmates have been assigned to watch the 4 following video clips on YouTube. You can do this on your own, but you must communicate with your group no later than next Sunday. I must tell you that my course is hybrid, which means I don't meet with the students every week, but every other week. So they do have clear deadlines that are set in the calendar of my courses, WebCT. But it's important that when you write instructions, you give them a deadline. I put Sunday here. Normally I would write Sunday, May 3rd, for example. And then if our course is on Monday, at least everybody has completed that activity by then. Then they have to email each other to negotiate. And I've put that in a different color because that's another interaction that I want them to have that's collaborative. They have to negotiate the best time and format of their communication. So while they're watching the video clips, they have to observe and reflect on the following nonverbal communication, and I've listed them there. Once together online in the discussion tool or chat, or they may decide to communicate in a telephone conference, that's fine. They have to discuss what nonverbal behavior patterns each observed in the videos. And then finally, individually, they have to write an essay and submit it to me. So I don't know if this will work, but we can always try. There are direct links to YouTube. I've selected 4 video clips from movies, and I try to find languages that people don't speak in our class. This is Portuguese. So at the time, nobody spoke Portuguese in class. This way, they were absolutely forced to look at the nonverbal communication, the behavior. So that's the idea. And it was very easy to link. Okay. So they watch the 4 videos, and then they write an essay on that. But before that, there's all the collaborative work that they do together. Facebook is very new for me. I was always apprehensive about using Facebook because it is an open, shared application. But last year, I was in Monterrey, Mexico. We have partners there, the Tecnológico de Monterrey, and we were giving an on-site course. And all the professors there said they were on Facebook, and they had created all these workspaces on Facebook for their students. And that's how they kept in touch once the course was over. But during the session, they did all sorts of activities. And I thought, well, if they can do it and they're not in the least bit afraid, then maybe we should try it too. So this session, I started something. It's still very early. Hopefully next year I'll have more to tell you about that. But in the English Communication and Cultural Patterns course, I created a social network on Facebook for my students. And what they had to do was post either links or pictures or video clips on their culture. So it was new. It worked well. We didn't work on it all session, of course, because we had many other things to do. But here's an example of an activity. It was right at the beginning. You've been invited by your lecturer to join your class network in Facebook. An account has been opened under the name of English Communication and Cultural Patterns. Sign up and accept the invitation to join this group. Your task is to contribute to this network by adding pictures, video clips, links, and other information pertaining to your culture. You can also communicate directly with classmates by writing on their walls or through the built-in email tool. And the objective is social interaction and information exchange. So another 2 interactions in collaborative learning. As I said, it's still fairly new. We didn't have any problems. I had some questions earlier from some of you who stopped at the table as I was demonstrating, whether outsiders were able to get in. Well, yes, we can't really block anyone, although somebody does have to become a member of your group, and to do so, you have to send an invitation. But with a name like English Communication and Cultural Patterns, nobody would really be interested in joining, right, unless they knew about it. So we're safe in that sense. And also, you could become a fan, which means you could view our Facebook network, but you can't participate. So that's it for now. There were 20 students who worked on that. It went very well. We didn't have any problems, but I intend to continue this work in the fall and the winter so that by next April or May, I'll have a lot more to tell you about this. But don't be afraid of Facebook, okay? It's not as bad as people make it out to be, as though you put your material there and it doesn't belong to you anymore, or that it's open to the whole world. No, you just have to be careful on what you give access to the public, just as with anything else. There's LinkedIn. This was something new for me. I haven't used it, but some of my colleagues have. It's a site that allows registered users to maintain a list of contact details of people they know and trust in business, to find jobs, make new contacts, and so on. And there's a searchable LinkedIn group feature, which allows users to establish new business relationships by joining alumni, industry, or professional and other relevant groups. So this might be something you're interested in, you might want to explore. A sample activity could be you could have students join the network, browse for job postings, contact potential employers, discuss job prospects with human resources personnel and or other employment seekers. And you can have students work in pairs for online interview role-playing based on real companies, real job postings, and real job requirements. You've heard of Second Life, I assume. Second Life is very interesting. I am also a member. I haven't had much time to explore this, but I was at a conference 2 years ago, and there was a professor from Harvard. She was a law professor. And she was teaching an ethics course. And she was on Second Life. She had created an avatar. And she asked her students to create avatars and join her virtual course in Second Life. And she said it was amazing in that students who would normally not speak up in class because they were afraid to give their opinion or be singled out had absolutely no problem having their avatars do the speaking for them. So this piqued my curiosity, and I started exploring Second Life. And it's interesting, but it is a little more dangerous because it's a real world. The fact that it's virtual doesn't change anything. The dangers are still there. The first time I went on, trying to figure out how to hop around from one place to the next, it's like playing a video game, somebody approached me and asked if I wanted to have sex. So I quickly logged off, and that was the end of that for a few months because I thought, okay, well, it's not really appropriate as a teaching tool. But I started to re-explore it, and I didn't want to give it up just yet. So just to let you know that it's out there, and it might be something that you're interested in looking into. And here's an example of what you can do. For example, you and your classmates have created a political party in Second Life. Not really you, but your avatars, will now work on creating the electoral campaign and follow the instructions set out in task one. So everything has to be clearly stated. But there is a lot of potential there. And McGill has bought what they call islands. I think if you speak to the library people, they'll be able to give you a lot of information on that. They did a demonstration last year, and it's amazing what they have. So, you know, if McGill endorses it, then hey, we can explore it. There's Twitter. Twitter is a social networking and micro-blogging service. It's very much like sending a text message, except you can receive that through your email or while you're working on something else. It's also something that you might want to explore. I put OMGWRU because this is how young people text each other today, like, oh my God, what are you doing? a whole different language that we need to learn. MySpace is somewhat like Facebook, but I hear it's a little bit outdated now. Facebook is more popular, but there's something else that you could look into. I think I only have a few minutes left, and the timing is good. Avoiding some pitfalls when creating collaborative online activities. Create clear instructions for each member of the group, as well as for the whole group. Design each activity in such a way that it can be done even if one member or several members of the group is missing, because that could be a problem. If you design your collaborative learning activities in such a way that all the members of the group have to participate, then there's a big problem if somebody's absent. So keep that in mind. Have alternative plans, perhaps out of a group of three, two are absent and or two don't participate and one is left by him or herself. Well, you have to have a backup plan. What can this person do alone? Okay. Specify a due date and mode of submission for each activity. It's important to let them know if they should send it to you as an attachment through email or if they should post it somewhere and when it's due. Let your students know when they should expect your feedback online. Sometimes students are under the impression that the second they send you something, they'll get a response right away. You're just waiting for them. So you need to tell them that, you know, I will reply to you in 24 hours or 48 hours or in tomorrow morning. Okay, they need to know that. Specify whether the activity is graded or not. That's important as well. And in my experience, if there's no grade attached to it, you might not get a lot of participation. So you might want to think of attributing some marks to your activity. Don't assume that students will understand what they have to do. It might be clear at the time when you're writing your instructions. Read it over and over again and ask a few people to read your instructions and see if they understand what you intended. Because this is online and your students won't be there to ask you. So you have to be absolutely certain that they know what they have to do. And don't forget to give students feedback often. The key here is often, okay? It's online. If you're not present online, they might say, oh, well, nobody's monitoring me. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to do it. No. Let them know you're there. You're watching. Send them an email. Hello, how's it going? Sometimes that's all it takes, okay? But it's important that you be present. And that's it. Be creative and daring. And above all, have fun designing instruction for collaborative online learning. Thank you very much for your time. Yes?
Just a comment for anyone who's concerned about security of Facebook groups. When you launch a Facebook group, you can restrict it to a certain network.
Mm-hmm.
So you can restrict it to the McGill network, for example. And in order to join the McGill network, you need to have a valid McGill email address.
Okay.
So you can make sure that
excellent. Thank you very much. See, I told you it was very new for me. That's wonderful. Thank you. Has any... Yes? Well, that is a good question. It depends. Sometimes I just have to trust them. It depends on the type of activity. If I ask them to collaborate through email, I always ask them to copy me. This way I know. If I see that there's a group that doesn't really participate online, then I always make sure I'm involved. So I'll ask them to communicate through discussion. I'll create a space for them, or I'll create some kind of group in another tool, or as I said, they copy me. But if they're very active online, and you can tell because you can track what they do, I don't always need to be there, but I do send them emails often telling them, you know, I'm here if you need any help, just encouraging and making sure everything's okay. But that's a good point. How do you know that they are collaborating? Yes. Has anybody else had any experience? Yes.
I just wanted to know when you created the Facebook for your students, what was their reaction? Did they all join the industry or was some reticent?
Well, we discussed it first. I wanted to make sure that everything was okay with everyone, that they all agreed to do this, that it was experimental, that, you know, I too was learning in the process, and that if anybody didn't feel comfortable with this, then, you know, we just wouldn't do it. And it was fine. I'm from continuing education, right? So our students are older. Average age is about 33, 35. Some have experience with new technologies, some don't. The ones who don't usually have teenage kids who are proficient in this. So it's not really new for them. I think there was a lot of excitement in using this new tool. It was a positive experience. Yes.
Did you find that with the necessity of monitoring the individual groups that you increased your workload?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes. Yes. That's the other thing with online instruction, that you do increase your workload because you're constantly monitoring. And it could be at night or on the weekend. It doesn't really matter. But there are benefits, at least in my case. All my courses are now completely online. All the course material, I spent a lot of time creating everything, and it's there, and it's wonderful. When I teach a course, I don't have to write on the board anymore, and I don't have to make handouts. It's all there for everyone. And then I just update and refine and tweak and so on. But yes, there is an increased workload because you do have to monitor them online. The advantage for me is that I teach a hybrid course, so I don't see them every week. And so it kind of makes up for the time that I'm not with them. I'm with them online. Yeah. Jean-Claude, you use LinkedIn, I believe. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
We did a very general introduction for the students in one of my classes, just to get them to please sign up, find out what that world is, to begin to generate some interest. 2.5 weeks ago, I created my first group, to which I invited my current students and a number of alumni, former students. I'm learning to play with it. I keep hitting limitations. I keep trying new things. As of today, so 2.5 weeks after, I have 50-some people on the network. There's a beginning of some interaction happening. Pairs talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
That started. I put up a few common messages, like a first news feed and the first topic for discussion. At this point, people are not picking up on that. So, as I said, that the group I created it 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
So I'm learning the tool at the same time as everybody is, but I got quite a few very positive reactions to the fact that a group now existed to connect. To my surprise, some former colleague who now works in Singapore popped up one day and said, I finally found you.
Yes, and it's all work-related.
Yeah.
Yes.
In this case, it was a little student. He's one of our former instructors. Currently, I'm working in Asia, and so he popped up, so he's part of our network.
Great.
So it really opens the world. You know, I have one person from the Arab Emirates. I have some people from across Canada already, among the alumni.
Yes.
The majority of in-town people.
Excellent. Well, that's it. It's the same thing with Facebook. I had an invitation from a student in Greenland who I had 15 years ago. And I never would have come in contact with her again if it weren't for this application. So there are a lot of benefits to all the technologies that are available to us. And as instructors, I think we're at an advantage because we can use these technologies to help our students with their learning. So thank you. Yes, Rick? Yes. Yes. Thank you. That's a good point, and that's what I wanted to say, that when you do create links, whether it's YouTube or any other kind of link, always check your links at the beginning of the session, because sometimes links are broken or they're moved, and then students don't have access. In the case of the YouTube exercise, I told them that if a link doesn't work, they can find a similar clip and use that in their comparison, but send me the link as well. So we got around it that way. Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Thank you.